Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. For half a century, Urban 15 has been a dynamic community arts organization that has helped shape San Antonio's cultural landscape. Blending traditional Latino heritage with contemporary aesthetics and technology, they've been a constant force in the city's art scene. Through music, dance, multimedia, and public art, Urban 15 has fostered a vibrant community of artists and audiences alike. They have provided innovative performances, often staged in unconventional spaces. They have challenged traditional notions of art by merging different artistic disciplines. What are your memories of Urban 15? Were you a drummer or a dancer? Did you just fall in love with their energy? Give us a call and share. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org. And we're joined this afternoon by the two co-founders of Urban 15, George and Kat Cisneros. And welcome to The Source, both of y'all.
Thank you, David.
And Kat, welcome to The Source.
Woohoo! Hello.
So again, our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255. If you want to say hi to George and Kat on the air about Urban 15. So George, tell me about how Urban 15 was created.
Well, it's kind of an accidental thing. We were working in Austin at the time with it was a nice little community of experimental artists. We were all in either the music department, the art department, and some people had already moved on to more professional careers. And we were hanging out a lot and talking about how interesting it would be if we could create performance context outside of the theater, the showcase. And one of the big influences at the time was the Fluxus movement and all the experimental and Dada artists of the 30s and 40s and how they all got together and just decided to do something. So Urban 15 was talking, we wasn't an Urban 15 at the time. We were talking about it, and then we got word that the University of Texas had decided to demolish Clark Field, the baseball stadium right next to between the music and the art building. It was a very famous baseball field. I think it was made in 1909 or something. And we got permission before they demolished it, if we could do a performance there, because it had great echoes and it was empty and nobody was using it. And we got permission, and 15 people got together, and we put together an ensemble piece, dance, music, and environmental sculpture, and all kinds of stuff. And after the success of that, the group just sort of hung out together, and we continued using the environment, the urban space, as a performance stage. And it's accidental. If we hadn't known that the baseball stadium was going to be knocked down, we might have just been a bunch of, you know, artificial intelligentsia talking about art instead of doing it.
And Kat, it seemed like there's a demarcation of labor in Urban 15 between the two of y'all, the couple that y'all are, George is kind of responsible for a lot of the music, the drumming, and you were more of the dance movement and keeping George out of jail.
Yes, it's always my job. and the visuals, because as a multidisciplined artist, you know, dance, visual art, and also music, it's the visuals that have been my ace in the hole, pretty much. Because just creating these Dadaistic, you know, costumes and now they've moved into lit costumes, which are just fascinating to work with.
Illuminated?
Totally illuminated. And it has been an evolution. But dealing with the community has been such an education. And as artists with disciplined performers that are, you know, multi-talented also, you know, we were creating a lot of art. And then in 1974, 50 years ago. But then we were in Austin, we moved to Houston, and oh boy, did we do a lot of art there on rooftops and streets and with dance companies, with musicians, with gravity-influenced art, sculptures, anti-gravity. And then we moved to Robstown.
Right, outside of Corpus Christi, which is a low-income Hispanic majority community.
Yes. And George was one of the first artists in residence for the Texas Commission of the Arts. And that was such an amazing residency, working with these little ones, teaching them, you know, percussion and art forms. And then we came home.
The thing that, yeah, David.
Well, I want to try and get to a caller we have here.
Oh, so, who's that?
We have Bonnie on the phones. And so let's get to Bonnie. And Bonnie, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just want to say thank you to Kat and George. I participated in the Urban 15, probably back in 1989. And I was going through a difficult time, depressed and... you know, like 30-year-old crisis, and I joined the team. I went to the classes and I worked on the students, and it was just such a joy. And it really lifted me out of the funk that I was in at the time of my life. And it was just a beautiful experience. I want to say thank you.
Well, Bonnie, thank you for calling. I'm sorry about the phone line not being optimal, but thank you. We got what you said, that she had joined when she was going through a tough time, and just the community of creativity helped her get through that and heal her. So, Drew, and get your reaction to that, George?
Well, much of what we do is tested for ergonomic enhancement. Everything we teach is about wellness, symmetry, deep breathing. That's what we teach. But the platform is people. And people work with each other. And the joy of being in an ensemble, I'll let the news out real quickly. I mean, when you were a member of Urban 15, that ensemble was like one heartbeat of in terms of coordination, rhythm. And it's a very physical thing. And sometimes physical exertion is the best way to heal the spirit. And Bonnie, thank you so much. I'm trying to put a face on a Bonnie right now, but we've had like several Bonnies in our ensemble.
I'm sure you've had many. And so we're going to get ready to take a break here. We're going to be hearing some of Urban 15's music when we come back from the break and talking about being at the forefront of electronic music, being innovative, working with the community, and also how you've been able to be working artist for 50 years. You know, I think that's amazing as well. We're going to take a break here. Phone lines are open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues right after this.
Support for TPR comes from Jingu House in the Japanese Tea Garden, featuring Asian cuisine with a San Antonio twist. Open for lunch 7 days a week. View the menu at jinguhousesatx.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. That was a composition of George Cisneros with Urban 15. And we have George and Kat Cisneros with us in the studio today. We're talking about 50 years of Urban 15 making art and helping shape San Antonio's culture and art scene. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you just want to say hi to George and Kat, that's cool too. 833-877-8255. George, what was that?
Oh, that was a piece called Within the Center of Memory. And that was a piece that evolved and was composed 83 through 85, the very years you were in that ensemble. And that's a recording, a more recent recording that we did and performed at the Tobin in, October of 2019, right before COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah. Within the Center of Memory is the name of the piece.
So you brought up COVID, so let me ask you about that because I've wondered about that. So how did y'all cope with the COVID? Because performances couldn't happen. It was, everything was shut down. How did that impact Urban 15?
Well, we kept rehearsing by Zoom at first, and we had three rehearsals a week, as usual. And then we started meeting in the parks. We were at San Pedro Park with our masks on, sharing the skating rink with the skateboarders. That's where we started, in that skating rink, when we didn't have a studio yet. And then we moved into Confluence Park, which is a really beautiful park. But we were meeting. We never stopped.
Well, what about performances?
We did some online performances at first, and then we just went outside and started performing in the rivers. Global Water Dances and in the creeks. We never stopped. We wore masks.
The thing that the listeners may not realize that the performance ensemble is maybe like 25% of what we really do. We're so deep into youth and senior education projects. So we went online with those projects, and it was ironic that we were exploring streaming and Zoom technologies before COVID. And so when COVID hit, it was kind of like we were technologically ready to handle that problem. So we started moving our classes and distance learning into a electronic format. And many of the seniors we work with did not have the technology at home. So we would create their classwork on DVDs. And then many of those said, oh, I don't have a DVD player. So then we'd put it on VHS. And even as late as 2022, we were hand-delivering VHS distance learning percussion and dance materials to people's homes, just with a knock on the front door and leave it there. So COVID was really rough, though. We couldn't have classes in-house. Our after-school programs were shut down. But somehow or another, through technology and just willpower and ARPA, thanks to the president, we were able to get through the very difficult time. And the city and the county were amazing for this community.
Now, a lot of people are familiar with Urban 15 seeing you in Fiesta parades. That, of course, that is only a small part of what you do, but it might be one of the more visible things that you do because the parades you see an opportunity to be seen by so many people. Talk about, you show up, behind the Aggie band or something, and here comes Urban 15, and now you guys are lit up and you're dressed like butterflies or, something very elaborate and vibrant, and then the drumming is going on and then a movement. And you see a reaction because typically also color schemes, puppets that you use are reflective of Latino community, Latino culture. So there's a lot going on, and you see, the crowd, which is kind of like a ho-hum, type of parade, and then suddenly everything comes to life. Kat, can you talk about, the presentation at these parades, or George?
Well, I want you to tell the story of how this started.
The Carnival de San Antonio, not our
Carnival de San Antonio.
Yeah. Okay,
we
had been dealing a lot with that issue of families, particularly women and men who have families who at one time in their life were really good dancers at Parks and Recs or in high school or in a dance company. They played music in middle school, high school, maybe a little bit of college. But then after they had a family, there was really no place where women could join a dance company or a music ensemble of any, you know, otherwise, unless you want to play clubs and things like that. And Urban 15 actually emerged out of the desire of people to want to continue their artistic life after they've had kids.
Carnival de San Antonio.
That was Carnival. And yeah. And that's why I think that it happened the way it happened, because people in San Antonio want to create. And the fact that Urban 15 has spawned 11 dance and drum companies off of us.
Well, the story goes a little deeper than that.
Right? All right, tell the story.
Okay. All right. One day we're at home. We had just been evicted literally from a building, the 110 Broadway building, because they're going to redevelop it. And we were at home and we got a phone call from a man named Mr. Diaz, who was the
Fred Diaz
from the Fiesta Flambeau Commission. And it was the first year that the Fiesta Commission had decided that the LULACs would be the sponsors of the parade. And he called up and said, George, is it possible for you and Tim and Kat to put a laser show together we can put on the back of a truck and come down Broadway Street? And we said, well, we can do it, but it's against the FAA, the Federal Aviation Agency rules. He says, well, y'all come up with something spectacular and call me back tomorrow.
What can you do? That's fantastic. That's what he said.
And so we sat around, and that idea of an ensemble of people who have been wanting to perform, but because, you know, there's no opportunity, let's create the ensemble.
So a community.
A community event.
Based on the Brazilian ethic, the Caribbean ethic, you know, there are places in Mexico that have these festivals that, you know, it wasn't quite happening here. It was mostly student, high school, and military. That's what the parades were.
And the parades were at 120 beats a minute, 6-to-5 marching style. And then Catherine's choreography comes onto the street, and we're going at 180 with like 4.5 steps, you know.
We're dancing the whole way.
Per beat.
But I mean, it's a long way to be dancing.
It's 2.5 miles, 3 miles. So it's basically 10 miles if you're
for
dancing.
Us.
But the thing that happened the very first year was we had a standing ovation for 2.5 miles. Everybody was on their feet screaming. And we went, whoa, what's going on here? So we got addicted. But I want to go back to the very first thing you said is we had our first child, and I had been dancing with a number of dance companies, and I realized nobody wanted me. I was a mom. Nobody wanted a mother in their dance company. So the realization that many of my friends with their little ones, so we started with the babies in the middle, and we would dance around our children so we could continue dancing. And that was the model. And there's so many dancers that at that time, they weren't, they couldn't continue dancing. So we provided a situation that young mothers could continue dancing. It was fun. We had our babies in the middle and played with them and then kept dancing.
I have an email from Susan. I heard Urban 15 the first time at a Dia de los Muertos parade. I was instantly hooked. I'm an Okie transplant to South Texas, and the beautiful celebrations just touched my very soul. Then I think I heard them at a carnival in Austin a few years later. Oh my goodness, I love them and I appreciate all that they do. So do you, you know, the idea of what you're presenting in these parades, is it for the dancers or for the community? Are you, it seemed like, you know, the parade aesthetic had been pretty much locked into kind of like not really inclusive to San Antonio culture. It was kind of before your involvement it was still very much Aggie marching band type stuff. But what y'all did was kind of like, let's play a little bit more what we can do with the parade and have it more reflective of what San Antonio is. Was that a deliberate decision, George?
Well, we're performers. We like taking alternate spaces and turning them into performance venues. And there was a skepticism that what Urban 15 was bringing was really dance and really music and really art. And it took us a long time to convince the city of San Antonio that we're still performing. It's just that our stage is 40 feet wide and 2.5 miles deep. And thinking of the street as a stage, it was a monumental conceptual problem with a lot of the funding sources and the public funding sources, because they couldn't see that parades had any sense of art.
Well, how come I keep seeing your pictures in these brochures that the city of San Antonio puts out?
Yeah.
I mean, it does seem like what you are doing has become part of the San Antonio brand.
Well, that has emerged, and it is a very important, significant thing that the world wants to come to San Antonio because they want to see something unique. And we're part of that uniqueness of San Antonio.
But it's not just unique, but does seem also authentic. Authentically San Antonio. It's not manufactured. It wasn't dreamed up by some California ad agency that was hired by the convention center visitor people to figure out how do we bring people to San Antonio. This is something that was actually, you know, it was grassroots. Kat?
Well, just the tradition of performance in our community that is street work. And the music is so beautiful. And the dance forms are more complicated. With festival work, with street festivals, at least you have a stage. But when you're dancing on the street, it's a different matter. The strength you have to have, the protections you need for your feet, your knees, it is complex, and dance is a complicated matter on the street.
And then you are able to take that, George, to Washington, D.C. for inauguration parades.
Yeah, we did three inaugurals. We did Bush in...
We did Clinton.
Clinton first, then Clinton Bush, first. And then Obama.
Right, I went with you to Obama.
Yes, that was so much
in
fun.
Fact, David, you are responsible for the Twitter environment in a way, because you were one of the first journalists to use Twitter, and you were tweeting. Maybe there was an audience of 200 people at that time.
Well, they were putting my tweets on the front page of the...
Of the Express.
Newspaper. Website, even though I had no idea. But, you know, usually people don't use the word responsible in my name in the same sentence. It's usually irresponsible.
But that was pretty... Because we felt we have a journalist embedded into this street ensemble that's packed into buses on the way to the inauguration. And that was quite an experience to do that.
A lot of stories, a lot of experiences with Urban 15 over the last 50 years. We want to hear from our listeners. What are your thoughts about Urban 15? Were you a drummer, a dancer, a performer? Do you just enjoy watching them? Do you stand up, you know, come to your feet when you see them at the Fiesta parades and more? Give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We're going to hear some more Urban 15 music when we come back from this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us.
Thank you.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. More Urban 15 music composed by George Cisneros. We have George and Kat Cisneros in the studio with us today. And we're talking about 50 years of creating art in San Antonio across Texas. If you've got a question or comment to say hey to George and Kat, give us a call. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And George, what did we just hear?
That was a rumba that we've taken to the traditional Caribbean Afro-Guano rumba, and we've brought in a lot of electronic devices, a lot of electronic percussion, and that was a live recording at last year's Luminaria that you just heard. That was, what, October 2023. And all of those instruments now are matched to laser shapes. So they're MIDI controlled, and so when one of our percussionists hits a drum pad, it makes a particular laser shape. And so we're combining a very old Afro-Cubano rhythm that came to the New World because of slavery, and we've now brought it into a 21st century percussion.
So let's technology. Talk about some of the art installations that you have created in some of the public spaces that have combined sculpture, visual art, and sound, George.
That's been a fascination of mine for many, many years, is to try to create pieces that are too long to sit through. So the installation became an idea. You just enter the sound. And the public art pieces were the one at the Museo at the Smithsonian, which lasted about a year. We have the International Center, which was an early multi-screen 26 TV window installation. I still have a piece at the Frost Center, the big atomic spur, the giant neon, and 4,000 LEDs programmed and all that stuff. That still hangs. But one of the things that the installations taught us, and the city has learned very well, is that pieces need to be maintained. And the concept of commissioning a piece was very strong, but maintenance and sustainability are very important issues about public art. And it's very important that we realize that the duration of our public art is limited by physical situations. I was working with electronics, and the lifetime of a TV or the lifetime of a video projector is there. But I really enjoyed doing the public art, and I've got a notebook of pieces that I just haven't produced. It's interesting how a concept like installation was very foreign when we started doing these in the late 70s, early 80s. And now it's almost a major. You can major in installation at many of the art schools now. It just feels part to have been in that pioneering.
So maintenance, sustainability, not just something that's important for public art, but for maintaining artists. You know, like you said, all this hard work that y'all have been doing for 50 years, you need an income, you know, and so there are different ways that you're able to do that. But since you've been doing this for 50 years, back in the 70s, there was still a very rigid idea of what type of art deserved city funds. It typically was back in the day that it was the city funds for art would go to things that were linked to old European ideas of what was high art and what needed to be supported. And then there was basically a revolution in San Antonio led by people connected to the Guadalupe Cultural Arts Center and other people on the West Side, and y'all included in that, talking about we need city support for local artists who are from San Antonio, who can create things that are reflective of our experience and our culture. And so And that is that fight is still being fought today. It's not an over fight, but at least now it's an understanding that this is something worthy of support. So, I mean, Kat, can you talk about, you know, how the city funds, even state and national funds being used to support art like Urban 15 is critical, not just for creating interesting things, but also for healthy communities?
That's a very complicated situation. It has been a struggle getting the recognition of Latino arts in our city, but we have made progress, especially, and David, you mentioned it, when you go and look at Visit San Antonio, there are images of Urban 15 in there, of the Guadalupe, without recognition, because we're part of the ethos of the city. We're on the street performing. Our images are, we've been in an airport in Denver, and we see an image of us, you know, being projected, because we are street performers. We don't have rights over our images, so we are everywhere. In terms of this, the understanding that the culture of San Antonio is what is the attraction to visitors. And it's taken a while for the city to understand this. They're still struggling with this. The European model, every city has that. You know, a ballet, a symphony. Well, maybe not every city.
but they would like to have it.
Yes, a museum. But the uniqueness of this city, of how we are as artists in terms of music, dance, poetry, written word, spoken word, murals, sculpture. We have just such a delicious flavor that is unique. And we appreciate the support. We would love more, of course.
Sure. And George, you want to add to that?
Well, you know, we were blessed in San Antonio because there was a brilliant woman here, Jo Long, who came in, in the 80s from Dallas. She was a great saxophone jazz player as well. And she became the director of the Carver Cultural Center. And she was working a lot with the same aesthetic that many of us were working on, and that's that art should be in service. And it was a WPA concept, very much of the New Deal. And that is, she was able to take the Carver to a whole new level of servicing the community by free performances, by bringing world-class people, opening the doors, and providing much of the political weight that then was able to be used to form the Guadalupe Cultural Arts Center, Centro Atzlan, in particular, San Anto Cultural Arts were also part of that number. And Urban 15 was in that grouping as
Esperanza.
Well. Esperanza Peace and Justice Center, because we thought of the arts.
Conjunto Heritage.
Conjunto Heritage.
They
were, all of us were thinking of the arts in service to the community, which is different than a patronage concept. And Joe was very important at a critical moment in the 80s that propelled us all the way into the 90s. And the concept of public art being a process, an open process where nonprofits could apply, there was judging, there were adjudications, there were quality controls. That was something that San Antonio pioneered. You don't find many cities with as equitable arts process as you find in San Antonio. San Antonio is ahead of Houston and Dallas in terms of money going into the community to create. And for a long time, public monies were for people who like to collect, the whole concept of museums. And a lot of public money went into collections. But now money is being spent into creation. And that gives us the liberty and the ability to be truly San Antonio, because we're creating the collection of the future.
And in about a minute, okay. If you could, Kat, just kind of address the issue of how this helps create healthy communities. I mean, you know, it resolves trauma, makes people feel included, it gives people validation of their experience. You know, having culture that reflects the community reinforces the community and gives them resiliency.
Well, we're dealing with the intangibles, you know. It's the mind, the heart, and the soul. And what we do is healing, soothing, enriching, strengthening, and we make better communities through this.
We're taking a break. We'll come back with more Urban 15. The number to call in is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. That is Urban 15. You could probably, in your mind's eye, see them marching down the parade route, dressed up in their flamboyant regalia, lit, and just having a great time, and everyone seeing them responding with enthusiasm and just being an absolutely awesome experience. And George Cisnettles, tell me about that beat.
You were listening to maracatu. It's a rhythm originating from Bahia in northern Brazil. It's a purification and cleansing rhythm. It's an amazing piece, and it's the choreography is based upon every spring when the people they make fire with a lot of smoke upwind of the village, and the women used their skirts to push the smoke through the villages to get rid of any rodents or insects at the beginning of the
fumigate.
Spring. It's fumigate, and then they culminate with a basically a limpia, and the music is created just to purge, you know, all of your problems.
It's a blessing.
It's a blessing piece, yeah. And that's the piece we played as we walked past President Obama.
Yes.
And Michelle Obama was dancing.
Yeah, yes. She was. And and he recognized face. I remember
we were
his eyeballs.
Blessing them. It was so exciting.
I think there are people who live around Inspirational Hills who know that beat because that's where y'all practice.
We used to practice there at the Coger Center. Was that what it was called?
Yeah. Oh, so our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255. And we want to say howdy to our guest, Kat and George Cisnettles, co-founders of Urban 15. They're celebrating 50 years of creating art in San Antonio. There is an exhibit of photographs documenting the 50 years of Urban 15. It's at the Magical Realism Studios at 107 Lone Star Boulevard. The exhibit presents images of the Urban 15's evolution, captured by a variety of San Antonio photographers. We can see experimental performances to y'all doing parades, all sorts of visual elements. It's called Images in Motion. The exhibit is free and open to the public until July 30th. And so, George, you said you wanted to refer back to that what you're doing has a there is a long history of this type of work with WPA and your connection to that.
Well, for me, San Antonio would not be San Antonio had not we had the New Deal and the WPA, because it's the WPA that preserved the missions. It was Roosevelt felt it was important that these were significant edifices. And if you look at the pictures prior to 1932, most of the missions don't have any roofs, and they're all caved in. And WPA came in and they rebuilt the missions. The WPA came in and they built the Riverwalk. The WPA came in and they built the Sunken Gardens and the Sunken Gardens Theater. They also funded programs. But the WPA did La Vita. They helped with the Alamo walls. We had federal monies coming in as work and as beautification. Catherine's grandfather was one of the stonemasons who made the Arneson and the Sunken Gardens. My mom was in...
And the Riverwalk.
And the Riverwalk.
Yeah.
My mom was in the WPA folklorico group with Bertha Almaguer, and they practiced a block away from here, and it was the WPA dance companies. There was the WPA Mexican Symphony. My dad planted trees through the CCC out in Utah and Nevada areas that were suffering from erosion. But modern San Antonio would not be here as the great attraction it is had we not had this infusion of arts and conservation and preservation monies. It was amazing what we have here today. It is amazing. Imagine city if it had been paved over.
Well, I've heard people say, imagine what would San Antonio be like if we didn't have Urban 15. I mean, you know, you have been a force for the last 50 years. You have empowered people. You gave them training. You gave them a place to go when they were lost, like we heard from an earlier caller, Bonnie. And, you know, a sense of community. And drumming, as you said, is therapeutic. And people need that sense of belonging. I mean, so what do you feel like, what has given you the greatest satisfaction, Kat?
It is sharing. It is ensemble is something very magical. When you are together and you're thinking as one, you're moving as one. It's actually really funny if one person makes a mistake. We all make the mistake. I mean, we're that linked psychically when we're dancing. But it is so healing. And in these really hard times, starting with pandemic, it was the ensemble that made us feel normal and balanced. Music and dance does that because it is a group endeavor, and we are just so lucky to be together and to continue working. I don't know if that answers that question, but any dancer understands this. Any musician understands this.
And for George, what's been the most empowering? What do you remember? What are you most proud of?
I can be a pretty pessimistic and dour person, but when I'm with the ensemble, I mean, everything's clear in my head of what needs to be done. Getting into the rhythm of the earth and the rhythm of the sun is something that I need to survive. And I feel I have a lot of gratitude and I have a lot of thankful feelings towards the great people that have served on our board. Just imagine, the very first board president of Urban 15 was Carlos Guerra, the writer and journalist who felt that a community-based ensemble and production dance team. I mean, he put his heart into Urban 15 in those early years.
He's at Express News.
Express News. Right. And we've always had good board members who believe that what we're doing is good for San Antonio. So that's the takeaway.
So I know y'all have been at the core of the co-founders of Urban 15 and kept it going, and there have been ups and downs, but there have been many, many people who have volunteered, who have worked with you, board members, other volunteers who keep Urban 15 and other arts organizations going. So what can other arts organizations learn from how y'all have managed to keep Urban 15 going for 50 years, George?
I don't know if they can learn. They can
learn what not to do.
the thing is that we all make mistakes. And I've been lucky enough that other arts leaders came to me and help me out when we made mistakes. And we all need to be a helping hand for each other. And that's the main thing. When people say they want to be an arts organization, you got to start thinking that you're not just an arts organization, you're one of a community of arts organizations. And that's sometimes a hard thing to grasp. But we are a community where the total creativity of all these organizations is what makes San Antonio what it is.
But there are young people, like in high school, brilliant kids. They have great ideas. They have tremendous ambition, but they don't know if they can make a life out of being an artist. And I do think that we can hold up Urban 15 and y'all, of what you've done and may have accomplished over the last 50 years and showing, you know, if you feel the call, if it's like you feel like there's nothing else you can do, you feel like this is what you have to do. You have to be an artist, whether it's going to be in music or dance or whatever it is. You can make it. You can make a life out of being an artist, Kat.
Well, it is that desire inside of yourself. If somebody talks you out of it, you're not an artist. I mean, finding your voice is the first step, and that takes a lot of work. Finding who you are as an artist is the first step. If someone talks you out of being an artist, then you're not an artist. So this is a calling.
Yeah, but it helps to know that you're not signing up for a life of just complete and utter poverty. I mean, you know, that you can find ways forward. You can.
Yes, you can. And it may be complex, but you can do it. Just don't let people talk you out of it.
So how do we teach people to become, you know, I mean, to not to make art, but to survive as an artist?
That is, we should start doing workshops on that.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. We chose to, when we were struggling and we were really broke for many, many years, but then we chose to go the nonprofit model. That may not be the model for the next decades. There may be another model, and that's what we have to help invent, is what is the new model? Is it a social media model? Is it a for-profit model? We don't know. But if you're not making, you can't even get involved in that conversation. So people need to make.
So how are people going to be able to help celebrate Urban 15's 50th year here? What are y'all doing?
Well, we have a whole year of activities spread out. And we started with the solstice in June. We had the photography show. We have an event Saturday and Sunday at Urban 15, both days from 4 to 8. And the best way to celebrate Urban 15 is to listen to TPR. Because you'll find out what we're doing.
All right, we'll put it on our community calendar, and we'll cover it in our arts and culture reporting.
Go to our website. You can find it there.
And thank you, everybody in San Antonio. You know.
Yeah. And thank
keep
y'all.
Keep moving.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. George and Kat Cisnettos, thank you so much for coming in the studio today. And thank you for listening.
Hey, Debbie.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.